That's right. You've reached All Things Reconsidered. This is the weekly radio program that brings you different perspectives on the day's events. This week, we're going to do it a little bit different than we've done in the past. We're going to do it kind of like we did last week, a little bit of a live mic with some recorded interviews. We've got Steady up this week, a good friend of ours from Ojai, California. We've also got some audio from some of the news shows this morning and a few other odds and ends. So sit back and relax and let's get on with the show. I'd like to welcome you again to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I am your host for the evening. As I am every Sunday night, we netcast, every Sunday evening from 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight, for right now, until 11 p.m., right before Peter Werby, who also has his show on Sunday nights called Night Call. There's a number of things that have happened over the weekend, but the first thing I wanted to get to was something that just sort of really, you know, opened my eyes one more time to the fact that, you know, we have do have people in our government who do care about the resources that we are giving away, that we're spending, that we're trying to amass and use for the betterment of the American people. Apparently, the General Accounting Office. Now, this is, the interesting thing I wanted to point out about this also, this particular story, is that this story came out today, but it didn't come out in a media outlet that was a United States media outlet. This came out in the Guardian Unlimited, which is based in London, of course, or based in the UK, anyway. This story is about the awarding of contracts to Halliburton, Bechtel, etc. And the fact that these contracts were awarded without competition. Now, I'm going to read you just a few paragraphs out of this because I think it's important that you get the gist of this story. A powerful investigative agency of the U.S. Congress is to investigate the award of contracts by the Bush administration for emergency and reconstruction work in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The Government Accounting Office, the GAO, which monitors public spending, is to audit the contracts won by the U.S. firms. Already, contracts have been given for repairing New Orleans flood levees, rebuilding naval facilities, providing temporary housing, and removing debris. Companies winning the work included U.S. contracting, I'm sure you like the sound effects, U.S. contracting giants Bechtel and Halliburton. Halliburton, of course, formerly headed by Vice President Dick Cheney, is facing questions for allegedly overcharging on work done in Iraq. The Department of Defense was criticized for awarding Iraq reconstruction contracts to these two companies without competition. Other groups include Floor and Shaw Group, a Louisiana engineer. The move comes as leading congressional figures express concern over the contracting process. And apparently the gentleman who is leading the charge is none other than Henry Waxman. So if you get a chance to drop Henry Waxman a line and let him know, you know, I'm sure that you can find his website. I think it's probably house dot Waxman.gov or something like that, California representative. Drop him a line and let him know that you are absolutely supporting him, if you do support him, in investigating this and pushing the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, to continue on trying to figure out how these particular contracts were awarded without any competition. Now, you know, you and I, we know basically that how the government works. We know that the government, this particular government and this particular administration, is fraught with cronyism, as is the as what happened with Michael Brown. With Michael Brown, you know, I'm laughing because it's just, it amazes me. I get incredulous when I think about the fact that they placed a guy who was in charge of the International Arabian Horse Association. He got fired from that job and was hired by FEMA.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Oh my goodness, what was that? I heard something in the background, and I'm not quite sure what it was. Let's see if we can figure that out. See what that was.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Oh my goodness, I think it was somebody saying, "Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job," and I think it was about 10 minutes before he was fired, or should I say, brought back to Washington, you know, where he could go home and drink a margarita, hug his dog, and sleep with his wife. You know, it really is amazing to me. I'm going to bring you up to speed here with another story, and this one is from the China Daily, of all newspapers. Now, you know, we're not supposed to appreciate the China Daily, but sometimes they've come up with some stories that are kind of interesting. This one says Bush squandered post 9/11 goodwill. Now, I'm sure that we've probably seen this particular headline, you know, any number of places at any number of times over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. We know what happened as a result of 9/11. There were over 2,000, almost 3,000 lives that were lost, over 2,500 in New York alone. And instead of rallying the people around this and you know, really taking a look at how we can, as a nation, how we as a nation could use our newfound unity, he chose to exploit that newfound unity and create the Patriot Act, install all these fellows, all these people into the administration that hate America. I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it. They hate America. And the reason why I say they hate America is because everything that they've done has been to change or limit freedoms. You know, and if a country is founded on freedom and is founded on democracy, then why is it that, you know, these folks limit and try to take that away? And the only thing that I can figure, you know, the only thing that I can figure is that they hate America. You know, they want to make this into, you know, Germany circa 1939, I suppose. And that's part of the reason why myself and some friends of mine, and I'm sure I'm hoping that maybe you and some friends of yours are going to be going to Washington, D.C. on the 24th of September of this month to participate in hopefully the largest anti-war rally that our nation has ever seen, and I would venture to, you know, I would go so far as to say not even so much anti-war as anti-Bush regime. If you're interested in finding out about this, please go to unitedforpeace.org, unitedforpeace.org. And along those lines, also I want to get in before we go on to our interview with the magnificent Steady from Ojai, California. Along those lines, also, we will have in the country, and we actually, he's not quite in the United States yet. He's in Portugal right now. But hopefully we will have in the United States at that time, traveling around the country and doing some lectures, George Galloway. And, you know, George Galloway is a friend of the left. He is a British progressive. and he is a pretty amazing fellow. And real quickly, I wanted to sort of rattle off some of the tour dates. He's going to be in Boston, Massachusetts on September the 13th. There are still tickets available for that. He's going to be at the it's sponsored by the Trap Rock Peace Center. He's going to be in New York, September 14th. That show is sold out. He will be in, or that lecture is sold out. Toronto, Ontario, September the 16th. Madison, Wisconsin, September the 18th. Chicago, Illinois, September 19th. Seattle, Washington, September the 20th. San Francisco, September the 21st. Los Angeles, September the 22nd. And then Washington, D.C., September the 24th at 7 p.m. And that will be at the First Congregational Church, 945 G Street Northwest, Washington. So if you're interested, if you're going to be going to Washington and you want to attend that lecture, I would suggest strongly that you get your tickets as fast as possible. You can also see, you know, more details about these lectures, and you can download flyers, etc., by going to Mr. Galloway Goes to Washington. And I love it. You know, it's shades of Mr. Smith, you know, goes to Washington. But Mr. Galloway Goes to Washington.com. M.R. Galloway Goes to Washington.com. Having said that, we have our own Mr. Smith on the show for this evening. And before I get to that interview, though, I wanted to remind you that you are listening to All Things Reconsidered. We are netcast every Sunday evening, 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern. And you can reach us at thetruthis.us/ATR. And right up next, we have an interview with Steady of Ojai, California. And we're going to go ahead right on over to that interview.
All right, I am on the line with my good friend Steady from Ojai, California. Steady, how you doing, man?
Good, Appa, thanks, and yourself?
I'm doing great. I know we had missed you in the last show, and was really just kind of wondering what's been going on with you. I know you went to San Antonio recently, and you're back now in California. What happened down in San Antonio?
Down in San Antonio, well, I went to visit a friend that I'm approaching 40 years old. I'm still a young guy, but someone who I've known since kindergarten, actually. He's now approaching his 10th year in the Army. He's a staff sergeant, and he works out on the base out there. And this is something that I had planned long before the storm came. It's a Labor Day weekend. I'm normally in Washington, D.C. over Labor Day weekend, but our conference got rescheduled and shifted, and so my buddy flew me out to San Antonio because I had the time, and he had the dollars in this case right now.
Sure.
But so I went out there for my birthday weekend, and as we're approaching that, you know, that hurricane was coming across. You were doing an interview with somebody in Tallahassee.
Yeah, Peter.
Peter, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great interview, by the way. I listened to that a couple times.
I hope we get him on again.
Yeah, is he a pastor or something? Or
No,
he
I think
definitely
he's
definitely went through the word there or whatever.
He was he is a scholar of the Bible and is really an amazing guy.
Yeah, very very deep and serious issues, and it's not, it certainly wasn't in the context of what we see of Christianity from Fox and Bush and you know what's prevalent. I put it this way, like sometimes we could be so heavenly minded we're no earthly good.
Yes.
But in the case of Katrina down here, we were looking at the satellite and saying, gosh, I guess that's not really the best direction to be headed at this time, and it steered clear of Texas and went up through the Gulf states there, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and did some damage like we haven't seen here. They don't know the extent of it. I mean, they know it's as bad as it's been, and gosh, anyone's guess is as good as mine. I actually haven't been watching much of the news, but when I was down there, I got to see a Dave Matthews concert, and after that concert, which was great, go Dave, we went dancing afterwards, and when we left dancing, I'm walking back to the hotel about 2 a.m., I see a couple of Red Cross buses pulled up, you know, blue, all blue, with Red Cross on them, the lights on top. They look like military buses, but the Red Cross clearly defining it as a medical vehicle. Pulled up there on the street. No one was on it, but Teddy, my friend that I just mentioned, he was already had a call to volunteer, for his unit to go help out at Kelly Air Force Base, which is not where he works. He's on Lachlan.
Okay.
But he turned that one down, and because he had me and another friend in town, and we were doing the concert thing, I guess it was kind of selfish, but it was planned way in advance before the hurricane was really even on the map.
Sure.
So when we saw those buses, I felt very fortunate, aware of what was happening, but at the same time, I felt really sad.
Yeah.
It was, 400 or 500 miles away from where I was standing was absolute devastation. And the refugees or, relief effort had already hit San Antonio by Friday night, and by Sunday, it was clear Teddy had already got two more calls for volunteer opportunities and accepted the third one, and we all went out to Kelly Air Force Base to actually, with the intention of helping. Personal things got in the way, so to speak, and because it was a volunteer situation and my flight was leaving on Monday, we actually didn't do anything. Their cots were set up in four different rooms. I did tour through the facilities there, and they had 8,000 cots set up. It was pretty, those people had a cush as opposed to anyone left out in the elements, but it was like a massive barracks, huge room, 2,000 cots. There were four rooms set up on campus there at Kelly USA, which is a decommissioned Air Force base. This is what is on the plan for, that's the BRAC plan.
Right. The BRAC is the base realignment, and what else?
In closing, or I don't know. I was focusing more, but that's exactly what it is. Base
realignment and closing commission, I think. Yes.
Yes. The specific one, another one that was coupled with it, which we didn't get as much publicity, was CARES, and that's the one that targeted VA hospitals.
Yes.
Now, I'll move right into that because it ties in. Not just me being in San Antonio and that specific base, but there you have a situation where, in former times, we used to calculate as a nation population per county and have a mandate to have certain bed count per 1,000 population per square mile. For that very instance that a hurricane comes in, whether you're talking about a hurricane that wasn't, the relief effort wasn't prepared for, or you had a hurricane bigger than the engineering design of the area that which was hit, these bases outside and across the country, all over the nation, in different various places in the world, are appropriated for the type of population that we have. That's why America really is, or the United States, is the richest nation in the world. Don't look at the numbers right now. But as far as living standards and appropriations for the average citizen, we used to calculate that per 1,000, per county, per square mile. That's real politics. That's general welfare. That's taking care of your people. We don't do that anymore. It's purely speculative.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
You see, so here, going into the immediate situation now with Katrina and the base closing, perfect opportunity. Kill BRAC, kill CARES. Call up the old generals and full birds from the Army Corps of Engineers. These people know how to build cities overnight, which was made in a statement, in a webcast, by a statesman, Lyndon LaRouche. This guy's been on the scene for 40 years, but I'm not going to spend too much on that because in those 40 years, most people have had an opportunity to get to him, but this is a guy to watch. This is a guy who's been completely riddled out of all the election processes, any of the video debates, newspapers, and you got to wonder, let the PNY. He's a very controversial political figure, and I wasn't going to bring him up until like the 10th show, but with this thing going on, the guy acted like the president. He was calling the generals. He was calling the colonels, people who he served in World War II with, and said, look, I got a plan. You going to be ready to move on it? Hey, they're ready to go. Give me some funding. Give me some appropriations. And give me some authority, and we'll go. We'll move.
But if you think about that for a minute, and I don't want to derail where we're going with this at this point, but
please introduce us something.
Well, I really think that, you know, it's my belief, Steady, that the government I don't want to say orchestrated this disaster, because this disaster, but in a way, over a long term, it was fairly, orchestrated. You know, I mean, that the money was diverted to Iraq instead of to work on the levees, which in turn, you know, caused the massive flooding. But, you know, it's my belief that the federal government at this point wants to be perceived as completely inept. I mean, there's a reason why there wasn't any kind of decent reaction for, you know, to after the storm. I mean, you know, because we have people in government who dislike government. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Now, if you follow that thought out and wonder, okay, so if that was the desired result, maybe we could ask, why would someone want the government to be perceived as inept? And I can offer my position just as hearing that would be because people already feel that way and they want to reaffirm it, that there is no hope to rebuild the nation, that their properties won't be saved, that insurance companies won't pay their bills, that the government doesn't represent them. Any hope, any glimpse of a hope or gleam from this that could be drawn wants to be smashed. So that would be consistent with, you know, the government to be perceived as inept, to completely wipe away any ability of people to draw from the government. But that's, I did kind of get into that originally in identity, and that one person can't identify themselves as being able to make that difference. And I think the people right now are faced with a paradox. This was supposed to work for us.
Right. Well, and that's just it. I think the people have not. See, this is the. And I almost feel like I'm coining this this whole thing. But I wrote an editorial over the last week. One day, I can't remember what day it was. But essentially, in the editorial, what I'm saying is that the entire aim was so that. We would feel more comfortable in privatizing even more of the government than allowing the government itself to manage disasters such as this. That the ineptness, the ineffectual response, you know, was just another way to say, see, the government is not your friend. The government cannot take care of you. You know, we need to rely on private business, private corporation to make this happen. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do now, and here that is a great point. And I do now. I'm getting the full picture, and I'm not going to steal someone's thunder here because, again, this is a statement from the Saturday the 3rd, September the 3rd, which is my birthday, just to let everybody know.
Well, the latest happy birthday.
September 3rd, where this is a result. Yes, it is, Bruce Zappa, of corporate thinking. This is the whole situation across the nation, and the outsourcing and the pension frauds and Arthur Andersen and Enron and Wall Street and Y2K. This is all corporate thinking. There's no general welfare thinking. There's nothing to, I don't care about the next generation. That's the thinking. What can I get for me today? Viagra. I mean, give me a break.
Exactly.
I mean, $425 million in the first quarter this year, and now they come out with this thing that says people that have been taking the Viagra drug have been there's a small percentage that are in experiencing blindness.
Experiencing blindness.
You know?
I thought that's what happened when you masturbate. No, I'm sorry.
Exactly. It's like you can see these guys in the back room who sell this shit just laughing their ass off.
Well,
sorry.
Well, I completely agree. I think, you know, again, you know, and also I think there was an article this week written by Tom Hartman that it talked about how we shouldn't elect people to government who hate government. That, you know, if we truly want to get the best government that we want, we need to elect people who number one, desire to do it, and number two, have a proven track record, you know. And obviously this current administration has pretty much everything that is touched has turned to crap.
I want to direct this back to the people, though.
Okay. This is your segment. So
to make a little light of it, and then maybe offer some solution there, and that is the people, you know, hate their government. They despise their government. So they elect bad officials so they can hate their government more sincerely.
That's an interesting idea.
Now, that's not mine, okay, but that's an assessment that seems pretty, you know, realistic.
That is, well, it does make a lot of sense.
Making fun of it, anyways.
It does make a lot of sense. You know, you almost have to wonder how much of that is the reverse psychology of some, you know, of some of the right wing think tank, you know, people who have been pushing this idea. I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan said, for instance, you know, the nine most fearful words in the English language were I'm here, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. You know, and that was back in the 80s. So
jumbo shrimp.
27 years, you know, we've had this disdain for all things government, and yet these people keep getting elected. That's something I really don't understand. But we were talking about this is your segment. Why am I talking?
Well, it's the input. Doing a little analysis on our own show as we're all coming up.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good to have you put. It gives me something to, you know, where I'm not reading or just going verbatim what I'm talking about, because we want it through the lens of All Things Reconsidered.
There you go.
And it's your show. It's our show as you've made it to be. But it's ultimately, it goes the direction the way you question, and I love that. It tests my own ability to stay alert.
So you were in, okay, you were down in San Antonio, and I want to just for a moment, you know, you were down 400 miles away from where this occurred. Were they bringing evacuees into where you were?
I didn't see anybody coming in. I would guess that these were people who were smart and had already moved out prior to.
Okay, so these were people who were actually fleeing the storm prior to. Okay.
I believe so. There were still, walls of papers, you know, this is my name, this is my number, I'm missing three children.
Oh my gosh.
I'm here. I mean, I have pictures of them. I might have sent them to you attached to an email. I'm not sure, but I took a couple pictures while I was there, a video camera, and through the magic of this, you can capture video images and turn them into pictures.
Sure.
I didn't have to stop and pose. I could just run the camera through the whole thing and do it later, which is something that I really appreciated, because there was a little bit of personal conflict with me and my friend and his girlfriend and what we wanted to do there. He's a hardcore conservative guy.
Oh, okay.
Who gave us the whole shtick. I mean, part of the reason that it didn't happen for us is because he said, I don't want to hear about your politics. Oh, yeah, Bush has got a weather machine out there, right? Yeah, this is his fault. Out there in Bermuda Triangle. He started all this stuff, right? This is Bush's fault. You know, that type of thing. I want to hear about dancing. I want to go to Dave Matthews. I want to think about hedonism.
Yeah.
Okay, just completely removing themselves and in denial of this major catastrophe is going on at your doorstep, sir.
What was your first reaction when you saw, surely when you saw this stuff getting posted, all of a sudden it sort of became absolutely real to you. What was your first reaction?
I felt bad that I was actually down there with my camera.
Really?
Because that I wasn't helping.
Okay.
Because I have that spirit, Zappa, I do. But the comments that I just made were made early, as I wanted to demonstrate to my friend what it's been that he's missed me over the last 15 years and what I've been doing. You know, this is what I do. I brought the movie Inside Iraq, and I wanted to show him that. Because that's as unbiased as a film as you can get. The guy went there with his camera and just took pictures.
Sure.
So, I mean, as opposed to the other film that I presented, Beyond Treason, that is hardcore.
Yeah, very, very hardcore.
They're going after the establishment. Those people put their lives on the line. But that Dr. Rocky, I mean, that guy's a scientist, and they discarded him as soon as he did his work.
Yeah.
This is what this stuff does. Okay, thanks, dude. Beat it. Boom, we're waiting for you to die.
But this, you know, and I guess I'm like, focusing more on that, you know, because I think all of us, you know, and this is—I know—we're going back to the to the operation cleanup deal, but you know, all of us had a moment where we went from, oh, this is just another hurricane crashing up the coast, not a big problem, it'll whip things around, and some city that we watch on television will get beat up pretty good, but it'll be okay in the long run. I think there was a point when we thought, when we went from that line of thinking into, oh, my God, you know, this is completely out of control, number one, and two, beyond the scope of anything any of us in our lifetimes have ever witnessed. And, you know, I guess, you know, that moment for me, you know, was Wednesday. But, you know, when I was just, I happened to
Wednesday this week?
Wednesday last week.
Last week,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
And that's when I started gathering information for last week's show. But, and I was, you know, and I knew you were down there, and I was hoping to hear from you. But, you know.
I popped in over there to Hartman's chat room, but not for very long.
Right.
Just, and the day for me when I realized it, Friday we were going to go do the Schlitterbach thing, but his planning, you know, that's a, here again, another pleasure-seeking thing, but it's a wave pool in San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm getting to the point here, but his planning for my trip down there on my birthday, not getting on you, Teddy, but the place is only open on weekends, and we drove out up there on a Friday.
Right.
So we could have definitely helped on the time that his unit called him to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really could have been heroes, and I don't do it to be a hero, but geez, I was in the place, and they needed the help, and like, what better? That's a golden opportunity for a guy on my tip, you know, doing
sure.
what I'm doing. I want to help. I've
Absolutely.
Given my time to many things. So that day came about Saturday after Dave Matthews and the dancing when I saw the Red Cross buses, and then I heard on the news down there in San Antonio that, you know, that Lackland was expecting 25,000. And he got another call later on Saturday afternoon, which was the second call that he turned down. And by Sunday, he got a third call, and we were going to go out to Kelly Air Force Base, and that's actually where we went. So it shifted for me, but we weren't even in tune with the news. I wasn't watching it because, for the reasons I said earlier, he didn't want to hear about it. He didn't want to be involved with it. I was in town. It was my birthday. It was Labor Day weekend. I feel, you know, like this is almost a confession for me. In that situation, the humanitarian's heart, we would have been down there doing something. That would have been a golden opportunity. I mean, people who know me around here know that they hit me hard because I don't do anything for me, but it comes back to me in other ways, and that's how I live. Like the birds, you know, they don't toil or reap or gather into barns, but the God of the heavens takes care of them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And he takes care of me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to answer it for people who say, well, what about all those people in the hurricane, Mike? I don't know, man. You know, but I know what I can do for them now. I know what I can do for their children.
Right.
I know what I can do for their children's children by way of making provisions through the power and the sovereignty of the United States citizen and our government. We still are a nation. We rally behind each other and the historic principles that made us a nation that could support 300 million and become the industrial agro power of the world, and we can do it again.
You know, that's something that I mean, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something that blows me away. This is, you know, hey, what we just witnessed in New Orleans was a travesty of the highest order. But now, you know, if you think about it for a moment, you know, we are a country that in 200 short years became the most powerful nation on the planet. And we couldn't get people into New Orleans. I mean, this is just, to me, I mean, you know, I don't buy it. And someone is going to have to, and I think we're doing it right now, Mike. I think you and I are doing it right now. We are saying, you know, yes, we are. This country is absolutely better than our response in New Orleans. And you know what? We will get back to that someday once we get these people out of power.
Well, and that brings the focus in again on the call and Operation Cleanup, because it goes back to saving the nation or the republic, the structure that will allow us to do that. May 23rd was when we killed the nuclear option and overrode that push to kill the minorities option in regards to judicial nominations. It wasn't so much the judicial nominations, it was the procedure of the filibuster which was at stake.
Yes.
Having saved that, that coalition of senators is who was summoned before the Bush administration and had already pushed through legislation and got it through the Congress, and then the Bush administration killed that and came up with their own. Now, that coalition of senators, those men and women who made up that group, that is our state. That's how we're going to take all this back. You've got to utilize the Senate. The White House is completely inept, as you said earlier, and it's by design. I'm with you on that. I mean, you questioned it, but these people are typified by corporate thinking.
Yes.
It's not lawful thinking. The universe is about to smash itself, assert reality on these non-lawful thinking individuals, these criminals using everything from illegal weapons to accounting measures against their own people in finance and military operations around the world. These people have got to be stopped. We've called them the children of Satan. And if you just look at, they're attacking God's people, whether it's through negligence or through actual criminal military action. The people are being exploited.
Yes.
Every creed, color, name. The naming names right now on this show isn't going to affect the type of change we need, but believe me, those who we represent know who they are, and they're banging on their doors, and soon, you know, the spotlight's going to be on them.
Sure. And, you know, the other part of that, too, is that what's amazing to me is the people that are being exploited don't even realize it. A lot of them don't even realize they're being exploited.
At that point, and we could take it to another level and say that they even enjoy their exploitation. I dare say that. My friend, who I just mentioned, I gave you the word specifically, I'll never forget it. You know, that is someone who is totally in love with their exploitation.
Yeah.
You know, to be 40 years old and going out dancing, and Dave Matthews, that's all great, but in the face of the nation's worst tragedy, and to be confronted verbally and to deny it and say, I want to think about pleasure, that is loving your exploitation, your servitude to something that you know nothing about and care not to. So that's the type of thinking that we need to get away from and go back to what made this nation great, and that was its ability
to care about people.
To provide for as a only moral basis for government itself,
the
oversight.
You know, the Founding Fathers put into the document life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness being in one of our founding documents was the first time that it ever happened in any formation of any nation ever. You know,
and there are specific connotations to that term. That is a scientific term defined by Wilhelm Gottfried Leibniz.
Mm-hmm.
And people look that up and find out what pursuit of happiness is. But in a nutshell, what it means is that the cognitive, creative capacity of the human mind needs to be given the physical means in which it can flourish. You can do nothing against the taking away which already has been established for human potential in your education, in your, you know, the electricity. You can't take us back to coal in our houses because we have electricity. You know, you have to think about how many people you got. Pursuit of happiness changes with generations as technology increases, but it's always protecting your nation as the most fundamental increment is the human mind.
Yes.
How does the human mind thrive? It needs to have clothes and food and shelter and a means by which it can conduct business and go through commerce and not be burdened and still have enough energy to flourish in creative thought.
Yeah.
That's our founding fathers. That's the pursuit of happiness. And if people really got a hold of that, they say, how come I didn't get this before? Because the people who are making you their servants don't want you to know that.
Exactly.
They think you're an animal.
They'll
treat you as such.
Oh, my goodness. That was weird. Did you realize we just said the same exact thing, right?
I actually didn't hear you because I was pointing and pacing.
Well, I think that when that goes out over the show tomorrow night, just to sort of wrap this up, what do you see as coming out of this whole situation?
Okay, in regards to the Katrina situation, if it is in fact bogged down by red tape and inept responses and bureaucratic conjecture throughout all levels of government, we're going to have a major decrease in population and they're never going to rebuild anything. However, which is, that is, to me, is the unlikely scenario, but I'm always a worst-case thinker, expect the worst, or plan for the, hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Sure.
But the best-case scenario, of course, is if we can rally people behind this identity of a sovereign citizen in a sovereign nation that's been the strongest, most powerful military, industrial, agro assemble of people in a society ever to hit the face of the earth, and that this is just like an invading enemy. And if we surround them and go forward like 25 years of low-interest loans towards infrastructure development, give people back their dignity, teach them that, hey, man, this is what made us great, and this is what will make us great again, and get behind that, there's no limit. We can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, establish pride and dignity and respect, not only from our children and our elders, but from the rest of the world. And the world could say, hey, man, okay, these people are trying to, you know, they're trying to make it right. But if we fall apart, the potential here, again, as we were talking on another topic, is it can go either way. We are at a major pivotal point in society.
We really are.
In
we
world
really are.
History.
Yes.
And I find it's kind of striking to me as I opened up the first show here that is where I put the United States. In 6 months or 2 months or 3 months later, whenever it is, out of it, we're actually having to face this as a national catastrophe has hit our country. It's, you know, this is the type of responsibility that you find yourself in. As I said, you know, you're a hero for doing what you did back then. You're giving yourself the platform now and getting these ideas out. It's
well,
just,
and I would say that as a result of this phone call, you know, this particular interview, we need to put our leaders on notice, you know, absolutely, that we expect more out of them than to raise hell about the Republicans. What I'm looking for is for someone to stand up and say it's time for leadership to be created, if not available, to be created that can lead us out of the depression. Because right now, we may not be in a depression of economic stature, but we're definitely in a depression, perhaps, of a national depression of emotional stature, where we are being told that everything we have believed to be true about the stability of government is completely wrong. And speaking as one who was raised by people who grew up in the Depression and came through FDR, that is patently false. And I refuse to believe that, you know, our government is that inept. If they are by design.
I think that's being gracious, actually. And I couldn't agree more. We have lots of potential to go back through the books and find out what worked. Specific policies are FDR's Bretton Woods. That was
sure.
A fixed exchange rate policy, which everyone had even money across the board internationally.
Sure.
And we got to go back to something that will help us create jobs, and that's, infrastructure.
Exactly.
And that couldn't be in more obvious than at this time.
We've got to make it a can-do spirit, a can-do America.
I got it, Zappa. I think you got it too, man. If we can just pick up some people's spirits and get them to maybe just call in and talk to their leaders with these ideas, that will empower them to another notch, and oh my God, they'll realize that I can make a difference. And they will, again, embark on making a difference and multiplying that.
Absolutely.
This is the greatness. This is the Constitution is what makes us all rich in America. Any wonder why it's under attack today?
No doubt.
Okay.
No doubt. Well, Mr. Steady, I do definitely appreciate the telephone call again. And we're going to do this again next week, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, again, I've been talking with Steady from Ojai, California. Steady, thank you so much for your call and for your time. And looking forward to hearing you next week.
Yes. always, this is great. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right.
I'm going down in Louisiana, baby, behind the sun. I'm going down in Louisiana, honey, behind the sun. You know, I just find out my trouble just begun. I'm going down in New Orleans, get me a mojo hand. I'm going down in New Orleans, get me a mojo hang.
Oh, take me with you, man, when you go.
I'm gonna show all you good-looking women just how to treat your man.
Let's go back to New Orleans, boys.
That was Louisiana Blues by the late, great Muddy Waters, of which they have plenty of in in New Orleans right now and in other places of Louisiana. That last interview was of myself and Mr. Steady of Ojai, California. And there were a few things that he touched on in that interview, and I'm not going to rehash any of that because I think we hashed it over pretty well. But what I do want to talk about is John Conyers. And the reason why I want to talk about Mr. John Conyers is because Mr. John Conyers has turned out to be the number one anti-Bush congressman that is out there. And I'm going to read you a little bit of an article from the Detroit Free Press from yesterday. This is from Ruby Bailey from the Detroit Free Press Washington staff. At age 76, U.S. Representative John Conyers, long a hero to the civil rights activists, has grabbed a new torch. He's the darling of the anti-war, anti-Bush far left. Conyers, arguably President George W. Bush's harshest congressional critic on Iraq policy, openly proclaims that his goal is nothing short of impeaching the president. That kind of rhetoric is fueled by his embrace of the Downing Street memos, the 8 British intelligence reports that activists from Rochester Hills to London believe are the smoking gun that proves Bush misled Congress about his case for the war against Iraq. Conyers, who is expected to speak outside the White House at a September the 24th anti-war rally, has had his staff feverishly working to complete a comprehensive report about the memos, something he knows many of his colleagues won't read. And he says, it was only a few people who dared to first join Martin Luther King, he said in an interview last week of his small but growing support in Congress. The mood is changing. I don't have any intention of stopping now. In July, Conyers hosted a meeting about the memos at Wayne State University. Many of the 300 people, including Bruce Felt of Rochester Hills, said they came to see Conyers. He's my hero, said Felt, who began following Conyers after the congressman investigated voting irregularities in Ohio during the 2004 presidential election. He's the only one speaking truth, said Felt. That's something to think about. if you have a congressman who is speaking truth, by all means, make sure that he is heard, that you hear him speaking that truth. Very quickly, it has been brought to my attention that the president signed a Prescription Electronic Reporting Act, which requires the Department of Health and Human Services to award grants to states to establish or improve programs to electronically monitor the dispensing of controlled substances. So when you run for office, they will pull out your prescription card and release that to the media. By the way, that was signed on August the 11th, 2005. Bringing you up to speed on some more news, the White House has declared a state of emergency in 9 more states which are housing victims of Hurricane Katrina. This declaration opens the door for those states to federal relief funding. The measure indicates that such funding should go to things that save lives or protect public health or safety. These declarations affect the states of Alabama, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and South Dakota. I don't know that we've ever had a state of emergency declared for a hurricane in South Dakota, but I guess there's always a first. And I'm going to share or talk a little bit about, why I find this to be a little bit disturbing. One of the things that happened over the past week was that President Bush signed or issued an executive order waiving the application of the Davis-Bacon Act, which was written into law in 1937, which essentially said that federal contractors had to pay the prevailing wage when doing work in a state. Okay, so Mr. Bush decided that because of all the work that needed to be done, all the hard work, he loves hard work, all the hard work that needed to be done, we needed to be able to hire people at minimum wage instead of the prevailing construction wage, which perhaps now, in some of the southern states, especially some of the rural areas, $9 an hour for a construction laborer, maybe $12 to $13 to $14 an hour for a journeyman electrician, as much for probably a journeyman plumber, carpenters, probably about the same, somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 to at the very most, $17 or $18 an hour. Now, union wages are a little bit higher, of course, but we're talking about that now these federal contractors can set the wage. This is interesting, and the reason why I say this is interesting is because this is a president and this is an administration which believes in the free market policy. Now, if you're going by the free market and the market determines the wage, isn't that a good thing if you're going by the free market? I mean, this is what they espouse. But instead, he suspends a law that says that, no, we don't want the free market to set the policy. We want the federal contractors to be able to pay whatever in the hell they want. Now, I'm going full circle with this, so just bear with me. Following that line of reason, he has declared a disaster area, declared a federal declaration of emergency for 9 more states, including the 3 that were affected primarily by the hurricane. So, 3 states which were covered under the presidential order, now he has opened this up into 9 more states with a declaration of emergency. One can only think, follow the line of reasoning, that he will probably attempt to make this happen in these other 9 states. I got to tell you again, Mr. Bush, who had the opportunity to bring the country together and around a rallying point of national unity, is instead using the political capital of national disaster to exploit us even further. And, one more time, we've got I wanted to read you this letter because it's actually kind of funny. Michael Brown, who is the much maligned chief of FEMA, which was under the Department of Homeland Security, Michael Brown, wrote an email that went out to his friends and family, and this email is apparently just went out either yesterday afternoon, last night. This says, this is him writing, "I don't mind the negative press, in parentheses, well, actually I do, but I try to ignore it. But it is really wearing out the family," Brown wrote. "No wonder people don't go into public service. This country is devouring itself. The 24-hour news cycle is numbing our ability to think for ourselves," the Rocky Mountain News reported Saturday. "It's horrible," said Mary Ann Carnes, an Oklahoma lawyer who once worked with Brown in the Edmond, Oklahoma city government and got the email addressed. "He does not deserve this as a human being." Well, I'm sorry, but I dare say there's a few corpses down in Louisiana that would perhaps disagree with you. We are going to now play you a clip that is from the... these are really three short clips. The first one, this is from the 2020 interview with Colin Powell. You know, here's a guy who's an enigma wrapped in a mystery. He has essentially come out and says that he's sorry about the intelligence. Oh, this is a blot on my record, and this is terrible. But then he turns around and says something like this:
"Use of force."
So when the president made the decision to go to war, you were for it?
Yes.
Okay.
He says again:
"Use of force."
So when the president made the decision to go to war, you were for it?
Yes.
Okay.
So he's for the war, you know, but he presented bad data. You know, I can't help but think that you know, Mr. Powell again is at this point, I think he's seeking office. So mark my words on that one. At some point, we will see him step up to run for office. We are going short on time, but I wanted to remind all of you that we will be here again next week for our normal show. And then the week after that, which is the September the 24th, March in Washington, I will be bringing some interviews from Washington and trying to bring them into the show. So I'm looking forward to going there, and I certainly hope that you are looking forward to hearing the show. So what we're going to do then is we're going to sign off. But I will say this: Peter Werby is up next. If you'd like to reach the show, you can reach us at www.thetruthis.us. And we're going to sign on off now. But have a great week. And Peter Werby should be up next for his show. You've been listening to All Things Reconsidered, hosted by Bruce Birch. You can reach us online, www.thetruthis.us/ATR.
did some things to save thousands and thousands of lives.
Turning overseas at 10. Combat another nation. We're spending tens of billions of dollars. Now, most of us would say, hey, spend whatever you want. Like some people grumble about the lines at the airport, getting searched at the airport. I don't. I mean, I fly. I'm flying in a couple of weeks. They can look in my shoes. They can, as long as they don't look up my butt or something like that. It's okay. Because I want to be safe. And I want to make sure that other aspects have been surveillance, intelligence, and what have you, as long as it's within our First Amendment. But I don't know. And on the other hand, you have the suicide bombers, which has never occurred here. And Britain never thought it was good.